Leaders and Missions. Der Podcast für Visionäre, Gestalter und alle, die Wirtschaft, Gesellschaft und Innovation aktiv mitgestalten. Wir sprechen mit Menschen, die uns dadurch inspirieren, was sie auf den Weg bringen. Mit Macherinnen, Kreativen und Leadern, die durch ihre Visionen und Missionen den Wandel vorantreiben. Ich bin Carolina und heute spreche ich mit Goda Go.
How do I talk to AI to get the best outcome? Not something that just gives me an outcome. How can I actually extract the most out of that? And that boils down to prompt engineering. Prompt engineering evolved now over, I want to say years, feels like many years. And I was really fascinated with prompt hacking, because that directly ties into like, how can I get the most? How can I not trick system to output something bad, but actually just go on the edges?
So a warm welcome, Goda, to my show, Leaders and Missions. I'm really happy to have you here today in my studio. Welcome.
Hi, this is such an incredible experience and I'm really excited about this conversation to actually record it because we had so many offline. So now that we can share our ideas, this is exciting. Thank you for having me.
Goda, what is your mission? What drives you?
I think putting it in simple terms, I experienced transitioning from the background like architecture, which is, I would say, like creative, strategic, but also technical. And I successfully, I would say, transitioned into tech and found myself at the right moment and place when AI exploded. The thing is that it empowered me and enabled so much. And my belief is that if I was able to do this, many people can. And I also witness working with people now over the years, both for with companies and employees, but also self-employed people, how incredible it is and empowering it is to have technology on your side and be able to turn your ideas into reality. And kind of what drives me in that sense is we have probably millions of micro problems in the market. And right now, many people don't get solutions to those problems because it's not big enough, right? But the future that I am envisioning and seeing is the one where we are able to solve those more undertapped problems and empower more people. And I've seen that firsthand and it's very, very exciting. And I take huge pride in being part of that with teaching, empowering people.
And for all the listeners outside who don't know you already, you have different missions. And I mean, you're operating in the Productivity Hub. You have a very important role at the Prompt Engineering Conference and also in St. Mind's AI. And what is the thing, the red line, which connects those three things for you?
If I would point one red line, well, on a practical sense, I would say, especially in the AI world, this is not going to sound very sexy, but probably is going to be prompt engineering, which now gets so much bad rep. But the way it really started is with my YouTube channel. I was talking about AI for a year before ChatGPT came out. Nobody cared. And then I decided that, you know, ChatGPT came out. The number one important thing is how do I learn how to control this technology? And that came down to like, how do I talk to AI to get the best outcome? Not something that just gives me an outcome. How can I actually extract the most out of that? And that boils down to prompt engineering. Prompt engineering evolved now over, I want to say years, feels like many years. And I was really fascinated with prompt hacking because that directly ties into like, how can I get the most? How can I not trick system to output something bad, but actually just go on the edges and like kind of divert, right? So this is how this I would say Redline started, and prompt engineering with AI touches everything down to agents. Anybody who builds with agents knows that how important is your system prompt in the agent, and the outputs can change completely. Knowing what prompt to use with which model plays a huge role. So I would say that's Redline, and that touches very closely to AI security. So this is where I got, so I was involved with learnprompting.org. So from the first days, it was, we were like, I think 300 people Discord community. And now it's like millions of people. The Sander Schulhoff, who is just incredible AI researcher, works with every single AI lab in the world, publishes and collects awards for his research in AI security. And I think if we want to implement AI at scale and to actually have positive impact, AI security plays a huge role. And AI security ties directly to prompt engineering, guardrails, evaluation models, and stuff like that. So on practical terms, I think prompt engineering is the red line. If you would look through my like past 3 years, the other one I would closely, which is closely ties to my background, because I worked before I got to go my own route with AI, I worked in big data. So data privacy, like processing data, is very close to my past experience. And I think that is also throughout everything what I do. There is the saying, you know, garbage in, garbage out. And I think that's more true in AI than ever. So I pay attention a lot to privacy. And now I'm getting a lot into local and hybrid AI. So to be fully independent when Cloudflare is down, right?
Yeah.
As today.
Yeah. As today.
Any other day these days.
Yeah.
So yeah. I would say that is on practical terms, and on more human element, I just love seeing impact and when people are empowered and they change their careers, they get roles, they start businesses. And if I had any small touch in that part, it's just like personally very enjoyable, right?
I agree. I also love to see systems grow. And systems also in the meaning of corporate systems, and how people and humans are interacting with each other, and something new arises somehow, something no one experienced before.
Yeah. And one more comment on this, because I'm curious from your perspective too. We always joked, like especially like a first year, how working with AI systems exposed how horrible we all are at communicating, and how most of the managers are really bad at having clear instructions, clear line of thought, or like actually, you know, even for businesses and especially like in sales, how do you communicate your value proposition? Like if you want, let's say, blog post selling something, like how do you talk about it yourself first? Because leaving AI for interpretation, good luck.
I would like to share one of my biggest experiences or learnings with working with AI. What I discovered about myself and about other people and teams, especially in teams who are responsible in a business context for communication, is people who can manage people are really good in managing AI. Why? Because people who are good managers, who are good leaders, they're very clear in communication. They're sharp on the point. And the sharper you are on the point, the better you are with working with AI, especially since now we are working on our natural interface, which is language. So really good leaders are really good in working with AI because they know the use case. They are really clear and sharp in communicating what they want and what they expect. And then they get good results at the end without knowing anything about software, prompting, whatever. So they come there with a very natural way. And the same I experience about myself. The clearer I am, the better are the results.
I totally agree with you. And I don't know if this is still holds true, but one observation that we had, and I'd read a couple of research supporting that people who are older are actually better at getting or like leveraging AI. Not that they leverage it at scale. I think we still need to work on adoption of technology, but they are better on getting like more sufficient output. And that came down to the language and experience working with people, like in those managerial roles, right? So exactly like leaders who have experience managing people, like having interns, having employees, and, you know, trying to communicate clearly what they want, that transitions into AI. And a lot of young people just drop, like, they treat it more as a, like, just a person. And the, you know, the simple few sentences is actually not cutting through. Now models are improving, right, with reasoning in the back end. So that, of course, simplifies things. But I think, as you said, like, yeah, AI amplifies what's already there. If it's good, it's going to be better. If it's bad, it's going to be very clearly, very fast evident that there needs improvement on those fronts.
I really love to talk with people about the AI adoption gap. I mean, the main question, what's holding people back? Because the one thing is what we learn through our work with AI, but there are billions of people outside there who are still blocking. The layer underneath is, what is the biggest challenge why individuals or teams face when trying to effectively use AI? Is it the technique to how to speak with AI, or is it fear, or what do you think, what it is?
This is funny, because my TED talk was exactly trying to answer this question. I think there is just one is like a natural progression. We have this like a Gaussian curve on distribution. So early adopters, majority, late laggards, that kind of is established. And I think we follow that projection. So it will be always natural that people will fall into specific groups. My issue with that is that early adopters collect all the cash from the opportunities because they jump in, they take higher risks. But other thing what is not talked about is that early adopters carry responsibility for other later laggards, how they will adopt and how fast that happens. And with AI, I think it's so much more important how we talk about technology itself. And that starts, like, the first thing is education on basics. Like, for me to say, hey, just jump on Claude Code, say whatever you want, and it's one of the best coding assistants and going to code you the thing, that is so misleading and mistaken. And it's an amazing, content for, let's say, for YouTube, for shorts, right? That catches attention and kind of triggers people's imagination. But the reality of that is that what we are doing is hyping. And then the people's touch technology, their experience doesn't match the expectation. And this is where you start seeing the friction. What we need to do, and this is the way we actually design courses, and also we did huge courses for Yeshiva University, and for Uplimit, we developed one of the best AI training courses, and it always starts with mindset, and then followed the basics. So from the mindset, you have to be open-minded, curious. You need to approach it with, it's not just, I ask it answers. You have to kind of question your own answer. Like, how can I ask it differently? And why is it answering me like this? I remember I made a video this is like 3 years ago now. And it blew, two videos, which caught me by surprise, where I was like, oh my God, we need to do so much on education. One video was that I implemented LLM model, and God forbid, it was GPT-3. Like, now it's feels unusable. But I just implemented it in Google Sheets through app scripts and API. And I asked the same question, and I just dragged it 100 times through 100 cells. And it populated 100 answers, and answers like completely differently to one simple question, like, should they choose this or that? And you get like almost like 50-50, because I wanted to show that this is probabilities. This is like tokens. And then, of course, blah, 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 I explain the whole thing behind it. And another thing, which actually video went viral and was completely unexpected, and now I think it's a common sense probably, but maybe not so, using AI as a harsh critic. So this comes from my architecture background, because when we come with our pretty drawings and, you know, unique, beautiful ideas about buildings, we had this critic session. So basically no one would say anything good. All the professors and students, the only thing you have to criticize. And this is to push our thinking and try to see what we didn't see, because we are kind of, especially in creative fields, we are like with these rosy glasses, like, oh my God, I'm genius, I'm so creative. But no, like, you always need to be challenged. And I was like, I don't want AI. Like, why would I want an assistant who always agrees with me? I would not even hire people like that. As a leader, if I have a choice of having somebody who is like, oh my God, you're so smart, you're so great, like, your ideas are amazing, versus a person who is like, hey, I disagree, we should do a bit differently, your thinking has a flaw, I would always go for the person who challenges my thinking. Right. And I think it's the same with AI. Everything, how I use AI, first of all, I never accept the first answer. Second of all, I use like a critic mode. I'm like, challenge your own text, your own assumptions. When you do deep research, I always, after deep research, I go like, okay, identify biases, identify flaws in the reasoning, flaws in the hypothesis. What supporting arguments do we need? And this is why it takes me so long to make YouTube videos, to be honest, because I just like, I go deep down the rabbit hole. But I think you have to question and challenge things around you.
And to be honest, this was the normal way how companies were operating 50 years ago. I mean, in that case, it was people challenging people. I mean, the most successful people or developers of products, of technology, of infrastructure, etc., they were so successful because they know that as a single person, they don't know anything. They get better if they go into the swarm intelligence in terms of, I want to be challenged, because then I get a new impulse and then I can think further, or a different person can think further. And the same is, I think, one of the greatest chance in AI. Yeah. So if you don't take it serious and you challenge it, because the system, I love to call it system, because it's a kind
system
of
system thinking. Yeah,
it's a system because it's 0-1. Yeah. So, and it has no ethics, no feelings for right or wrong or whatever. Yeah. So the AI has no intuition. So this is what we have. And we can ask questions and dive deeper and deeper until we solve or discover something. And then we can take another agent to the round, which is a special agent in a certain item or a certain topic. And then we can discuss it together with the first person, AI-based person in the room. Yeah, so we can get experts on the table, but we have to force them to discover together. Because this is what AI cannot do. It's like a little child which needs a hand to be led it somehow. Yeah.
No, you are absolutely right. And to kind of just put a tie on this, you know, what's holding people back. So, of course, like, education is like a no-brainer. Like, we need to educate people. But what I mean with this, like, also hyping is because I think most people are not stupid. If something sounds too good to be true, you can sense it. Like, if it's like, oh, this agent is going to like completely boost your, like, let's say, sales. Well, sales process involves multiple stakeholders, especially in B2B. It involves multiple stages of kind of like judgment, this intuition, like verification, lead qualification. So just an idea that right now to humans who have more, who have intelligence, have all those attributes that, let's say, AI is lacking, you would not offload everything on one person. So why do you think that you can offload everything on one agent? And this is where specialized agents comes in. Like everything is same with life. Take a big chunk of a problem. Are you able to break it down into smaller pieces and clearly understand how this piece plays into second, plays into third, plays into fourth? If you can do that, and this is not even touching AI, just break your process into those stages. And then you can start thinking like, okay, so I can develop agent here. I can develop agent in a second stage, third stage. Because if a first agent is outputting bad, believe me, your second and third is going to just run with that and like drain your account. And this is why I really like starting with projects, like let's say in Claude, testing system prompts. And once I am confident that, okay, I'm consistently getting reliable answers, of course, when we can talk about evaluation models, then I move it to the agent. But if I just design the workflow, plug the agent, and I have not tested the output that I want, like I'm just feeding this AI labs with my cash. Like, it's just fine if you want to do that, but I don't think businesses have that luxury to just toss money like that. And this is where we face friction.
Okay, let's take this little piece because this is really interesting. What does that mean for entrepreneurship reimagined? What does it look like in an AI-powered world? How would you describe the shift in how entrepreneurship works today? And where do you see the greatest challenges on the one hand? On the other hand, and where are the most exciting opportunities?
Okay, so this is what, three questions. Let's break it down. But I love this. Like, I love talking about entrepreneurship. I grew up where such word was never around. And I just later learned that the things that I do is called entrepreneurship. And I was like, no, I was trained to university architecture career path. So I love entrepreneurship. It's hard, but I think like from the perspective of entrepreneurship, the opportunity that I see right now, I already hinted with solving million problems, it has never been easier to validate your idea. Just to do research, like you would spend hours of going through Reddit and like forums trying to find. Now you can just like literally do it in 15 minutes and already get like a sense of a market. So that's just on a bottom level. But also to turn your idea into MVP. Like, for example, I love hackathons. I used to go to hackathons and like just like during pandemic, that was my hobby. And we would spend, you have like, let's say 24 hours or a weekend. You have an idea, you have to validate that idea, and then you build MVP. And the MVP building part consumed so much time just because maybe it's just one person who can do that and they do it their certain way. Now, MVP, like if you know what you're doing and have a little bit of experience in education with AI, like I pushed an MVP in 4 hours. So I saw a TikTok. It was going viral. Lady was saying that, oh, it would be great for to have a solution. And the solution was the marketplace between people who want to support families and families posting their profile that, hey, we need support. Like maybe it's just $20 this month. We are short. I saw this. I played her idea for recording to AI tool that I developed, which is project requirement generator. Walked through the process. So that was, you'd have to do that homework. Decided on technology, decided on like a hosting platform, blah, blah, blah. 4 hours later, I have fully functioning marketplace with email follow-up, with a database, with a dashboard for accepting profiles. Boom, I send her an email. I'm like, is this something what you imagine? 4 hours later, it cost me $50. And of course, my hourly rate. So I'm not saying that it's cheap, and I'm not saying, I would never say that it's 10 minutes. But realistically, even someone who doesn't know what we are doing, that the learning curve, maybe it's 1 day, 2 days. So that fact that now all your focus and time should be spent on talking to the customer, validating your idea, understanding pain points, understanding which features of your MVP is actually important and matters to your customer, not sit and spend like 24 hours or like days or months for building MVP, which then later you find out nobody wants. And then you can't go back and you are attached to it like your baby, right? So I think this is insane superpower. That superpower also goes into non-technical people, because we don't need anymore to sit and wait for somebody in Silicon Valley, which is going to be probably maybe male developer, who is going to be seeing this problem, going raising money and finding that solution for us. We can actually, like, people of all the ages, walks of life, different industries, everybody have bazillion of problems every day. And not every problem needs to be $1 billion company. Like, I love indie hackers, because they go find a problem, build a solution with a waiting list, with a subscription for one. They test it, boom, works, scale it, sell it. And you can literally, like, I saw videos of guys who like build this type of product, sell it for hundreds of thousands of dollars after 2 months, and then move on another idea. So if you apply this mindset, even inside corporations, like just have a department for like launching internally projects, have a department for trying to disrupt your own industry, for talk to your marketing department, what problems do they have, how we can speed up. So just, you know, listen to people, pay attention to problems, real problems, not vitamins, like real problems where people are like, oh my God, my life would change. And not just like, oh, I would love to have voice agent. Like, okay. So yeah, so I think we are going to see a boom of entrepreneurs. We already saw a big uptick and trend in solopreneurs and small, medium businesses. And of course, you have to tie it with, fortunately or unfortunately, with content production and social media, because if you have a solution nobody knows about it, okay, like you're not solving any problems. But again, this is like all things coming together. It has never been easier to put your idea out there, to share a product, and you don't need hundreds of thousands of views. People, like, I saw people on TikTok getting thousands of views. Out of those thousand, if like 10% buy, amazing. Like, you know, just be consistent and talk to people pains. I'm curious, what do you think? Where your mind goes? Because entrepreneurship, like, is in your blood. So how the world has changed from your perspective? What opportunities you see?
I think the biggest opportunity in it is that you see that we're living since 2020 in an extreme shift regarding economy, resources, infrastructure, politics, if you go on a very top view on an integral level. And this has a crazy effect on entrepreneurship on several levels. And if we put AI as a catalysator, as a supporter in this game, I think it's the first time in history where four generations are working together. And if an entrepreneur is be able to put really smart people on board, you need at the end probably 4 up to 6 highly competent, responsible person who can make it happen, which was not possible 100 years ago. And this is beauty. This is real beauty, I think. Imagine those big corporates, when they were starting 100 or 150 years ago, they always needed a lot of people to get it done, to move it. And there is such a beauty in that, that you nowadays you need 5 or 6 really smart, connected humans powered with an army or a SWAT team of AI in the background to get it done.
I love this. And I, because of the amount of comments and like input I get, the number one answer that people jump is like, oh, so if you need less people, then there's going to be what other people who before would be employed, what those people are going to do. And this is like, again, going back, like, okay, well, if you have tools and if you see problems, like, and you have, we actually change mindset and education, why those people who before would go to be employed, why those can't now be entrepreneurial? So it's not like 0 and 1, but actually you, like, entrepreneurs go from the necessity, from the frustration. So if you get an easy option, you can just get a job, which we know, very nice salary in a corporate world is a trap. And if COVID would have not happened, I would have stayed in big data, just like very nicely, even though I was already like, oh, can we do differently? Can we, like, at some point you start being like, I want to express myself, but like still paycheck comes in and you are very comfortable and, you know, you don't really pay at the world for problems. But then there is no such paycheck. We humans, from the necessity, we get very creative. And you start paying attention what problems people see. And you go like, oh, wait, there is no one around me to solve this. Why not me?
Yeah, I want to subline that. This two perspective, or those two additional perspectives where you're flying in. First of one, the new, let's call it the new art of entrepreneurship, has two crazy effects. People are getting things done first in a very responsible way. So they feel responsible for it because they're in there with their skin. First. Second, we solve problems. And I mean, we have so many problems in that world. And this does not necessarily mean that everyone is made for this. Still, we need the ground workers. But the whole human resource wheel will change. People need to develop new skills for new profiles we've never thought about it before. Yeah. And this brings me to a question which I really would like to put on the table, is a key competency. So what is the one essential skill we need now? So if you could name just one skill people should develop to stay relevant in an AI augmented world, what would it be?
I can give you an answer that I blasted on a TED stage. And the answer was, be more adaptable. And by that, I mean that, so then you ask like, okay, what does it even mean? Like, how can you be more adaptable? And that comes down to really, again, what I said, like how we talk about technology. If we want people to be more adaptable, we need to be talking to others like grown-ups and not as kids hyping up toy for Christmas. And you have to be like open-minded. And I see like it's not easy. And this notion of like, oh, like I always done it this way, it works. You have to just have these days as a default that, and again, this is like everything ties back, this critical thinking. Be like, okay, so what I know from my even lived experience, can it be challenged? Can it be different? Listening. Actually, like when you see something and you want to jump with your own perspective, like just pause, just listen, just be like, okay, let me take this in. Let me deeper think about it. And I think if people would be, And this is again back to this like Gaussian curve where you have like early adopters, later adopters, like laggards. I'm like, what the responsibility early adopters have is to make adoption feel more friendly, more inclusive for other people. So it's I almost see this as my own responsibility. How can I make people be more adaptable? And I have this like example in my community where you always like, and I talked also with Bart from NA10, like he leads the whole NA10 community, like they do fantastic, love them, about this problem when you especially like in any room, physical or on social media, you have this problem like 90% of people are early and 10% are like advanced. So how do you talk about technology in a sense that it's inclusive for all of people? And my problem has always been like, I move few steps ahead than my audience. And the things that I do and I want to talk about is a little bit out of scope for people. So then I have a choice, like, okay, do I just blast the things to the 10%? Or I have to accept that there is the whole market of 90% of people who might want to or might be interested in this. But it's my job to make it like kind of like serve it as a dish, which is you can consume it. And this comes down to really being intentional with your communication, really being intentional with not blasting, like, let's say, acronyms all over the place, being intentional of not overhyping things. And I think that, yeah, as early adopters, we have responsibility to help others to adopt. And people need to be more, like, just have to accept it, like, open-mindedness is just your go-to. And if you see, like, AI bubble or, like, everything, like, you know, the way I see it is it's like a spectrum. If one thing is very much on one spectrum and another one is on that, none of those are true. This is my judgment. None of those are true. Truth is usually lands somewhere in the middle and everything is nuanced. So just critical thinking, and critical thinking is going to allow you to be more adaptable, open-minded. I know it's like bloated one, but...
I love this. I love this. You know why? Because it totally fits in something I saw in teams I build, in teams I see other building. Maybe they would not call it adaption. Some people call it get rid of your ego. Yeah, start talking to each other again. Start communicating in a very clear and respectful manner. And try to get from three rows to one road together. And that, because then you speed up. Not going this zigzag anymore. I mean, and this all comes together in that skill.
Yeah, and you know, of course, it's very tempting to be like, let me make you practical. Learn about MCPs, learn about agents, get a hold of a, like, but the point is when people go like, oh, automation, everything is the future. Well, that's going to change. It's already changing. Well, MCP like model. Well, that's going to evolve too. So if you get too attached to one thing, even in like if it's modern thing, and you don't have willingness to adapt, you are not going to keep up. We have to rethink our like automation systems. My advice that I give changes every 3 months, probably, if not faster. And for some, it could be very challenging, be like, oh, okay, I just learned this thing, but now I need to like change. Well, that's the name of the game. If you want to be relevant, you always need to be on this like edge and being not too attached to one thing. But you have to have like a focus of a direction that you want to go. And I think if your focus is I want to be useful in society and I want to solve problems, that is good enough focus. How you solve those problems is going to change. You just have to accept it.
Yeah, and you have to have a very clear vision. What are your skills? Where you're talented at, and what things you can just extend to it. And this is what I also see with people are trying to educate themselves in AI topics, systems, prompting, whatever. This is for me the homework. Just to, like reading newspaper, it's just, yes. You have to do it anyways. Otherwise, it's impossible. But to get a new skill is working with yourself. Yeah. So, and it's not knowledge.
Yeah, and I wasted so much money and time learning different tools, learning different platforms, and I have so many dead AI projects, which you could say like, okay, that then I can say like, oh, AI fails. But like the point is, with every experimentation, with every kind of play in the evenings, I learn and I get a perspective and I can develop like this intuition and sense when it is overhyped and it is not overhyped, what's real, what's not. You won't be able to tell that apart if you haven't actually had skin in the game.
Okay, this pops up, or this gives me a picture of the funeral, your funeral of AI.
Oh my God,
what's the
funeral?
No, just...
Agents come to your funeral.
Agents come to your funeral. No, it's just... I think it's good that we try out things, because while learning, we learn new skills. And the solutions we create on our way, let's call it like that, they put up to the next level somehow. If you take a look at the startup landscape, what do you think? Is there still room for new AI ventures? I mean, are we still in the AI startup era, or what does the market...
Describe AI ventures.
Yeah.
Describe AI
pure
ventures
AI
for
solutions.
Me.
Pure AI solutions. That means someone develops, for example...
Chatbots, voice assistant.
Yeah, chatbots. Thank you. Voice assistant. Just replacing the telephone or the customer service. So is there still room for this, or is this already overloaded?
Okay, so a few thoughts there. And I don't know if it's contrarian take or not. I, like, when I see AI venture, I started like, I don't care. Like, at some point, we called it internet company. Who calls any company internet? It's like, if you don't use internet in your company, like, what you are doing? So same with AI. Like, if you are not using latest technology that can speed up your process and just on data transformation, turning one data format into another data format, it's way easier with AI, right? If you know what you're doing. So that's kind of just to establish the ground. I don't care if it's AI, not AI. Like, I think it's going to absolutely normal. That's one thing. The other thing is that if you pay attention, this is like I want to talk with you more about this, this phenomenon that AI labs, the benchmarks and the research, if you pay attention at the benchmarks, the research, and they actually blandly say it out loud, they develop AI technology for research to that research would build better AI. They are not developing this technology to grow your business. Thank God, like, there is this benchmark, vending machine benchmark, the only benchmark that actually ties AI to actual dollar amounts for making a profit. Now, Gemini 3 comes out, it's the top ranking. So I think in vending machine benchmark, it reaches 5,000. If you look just at that data segment, other models had down below, then you have Claude that was leader. You go like, oh my God, AI models like 5,000, Gemini 3 is the best. Well, that benchmark for a human who would operate vending machine in the same period is 61,000. So the connection between this tying this technology to actual business results and business problems, the gap is very wide. Now, who's going to fill that gap? Will big tech fill that gap? My guess is no, because their commercial interest is in national security, working with the governments, AI research, pushing this AGI, let's say, narrative. So I purely believe that those gaps is going to be for entrepreneurs to fill in, for people who actually go and see like, hey, in my industry, like I have 10, 15 years of experience, we do this process stupid, and now I educated that about AI, like, let me rethink it. And here you go, you have a solution. So what I focus on is like, do you understand problem? Have you validated this problem? Do people, and sometimes people like might not understand that we need this. This is the phenomena with cars and horses. People wanted faster horses. They didn't want cars, but we are pretty happy with having cars. So this part. Now that then we really need to talk about other swing, like how do we support these entrepreneurs and these ventures? So this is venture capital that comes into play. And I just literally yesterday saw a video where there is a guy in Nigeria. He is non-technical, so vibe coded, a solution for payment processing without internet. I want to know how that works. And then pitched to Silicon Valley. And Silicon Valley, like, he got a no, okay? But then the same venture firm invested in a guy from Silicon Valley that developed an app that tracks how much water you drink a day. Now, in Nigeria, like, or like those regions, internet access is not given. Electricity is not given. So that problem, the scale of a problem, this guy was able to develop a solution is huge. But there is mismatch of understanding of a problem and support, because we are people who are in venture capital right now, like, so disconnected for real world problems, like a down human worker, everyday small business problems, but we are looking for this like more shiny solutions. And I think that needs to change. I think younger, like more entrepreneur people need to enter venture capital, and not just people who cashed out and long ago are not even touching customers. And I want to see more females, because another example, I was in a startup event in a jury, and there was a female that killed on stage. Solution is literally, I'm like, take my money now. I have that problem. And I know that many, many women have that problem. And when I talked with other juries, and they are like, I don't see big market there. I'm like, are you crazy? Women are 50% of a market, like more, actually 51%. This is giant market, and you don't see it because why?
So, because we still live in a male world.
Yeah. So, you know, I think, and I love men who have daughters, my favorite thing, because this is bridges the gap, and they actually go like, oh, wow, the world is very nuanced. And again, coming back, ventures that pay attention to niche problems, to real problems, and go outside the norm, I think will have a lot of opportunities. And if it's AI startup, like, I just presume that you use AI in your technology. Do you get now a lot of like AI startups just like, hey, we have AI, give us money?
Yeah, this happens.
No.
This happens. But what most people don't understand, if I look in my own portfolio, that I'm really looking for a solution which, of course, are tech oriented, solve a problem, but has also big impact on the whole system I'm creating. And the system I'm creating is, I mean, the core in is value communication, is communication, because I think this is one of the most important things you need. And my core competence is sales, go to market and growth. And this is what every company in the whole wild world, when we're talking about markets, I mean, they create really beautiful solutions, some with value, some without value. Okay. Yeah. And they all of them try to push it somehow into the market. But what they forget is how the market changed, how people consuming today's. Yeah. And this is why I started actually this sales or value communication creators company. Yeah. We are a production company. But at the end, we are supporting companies in telling their story in the market we face right now. So to make it as easy as possible to make a market entrance as fast as possible and to communicate it in a way people understand what you do, because most tech solutions are very complex. And if engineers are talking about solutions, maybe the normal people outside don't understand. They don't get it. And this is the gap we are closing. And the same I do with my investments. So most of them are all around communication and connecting people, because the sales game is a relationship game. It's about just creating stable and trustful relationships, because then you're going to become a magnet. Then you can grow, then you can upscale, then you can do cross-selling, etc. Because people at the end buy from people, and people who trust, they develop together with you. And this is the thing you need. You can even grow better with 3 up to 4 customers on a solid base, with instead of 100 who don't trust you because you're just telling things which you don't deliver at the end.
And I love it so much. And this is what I see like all day long. Again, you can have technology, you can have problem, you can have that really awesome idea, turn it in really awesome solution. No one knows or understands it. Good luck. And people also patch everything around the business. But when they have this bleeding hole, which is sales, for example, of the process of communication, and they go like, oh, like we want this AI, la la, we don't have revenue, we need to cut people off. Well, fix your revenue generating asset, and then you will have money to hire consultants, implement AI. Like that fixes so much. And honestly, like now, like, you know, we bashed a little bit of this venture capital. I bet to you that this product in Nigeria, the reason investors did not invest is because it was not communicated, not amplified, not shown the problem, the scale of a problem properly, but also not communicated. Because again, when you invest in the companies, like, yeah, idea, problem, technology, you invest in the people. It's a relationship. So you want a founder who will go long enough, be adaptable and change. Like rarely solutions stay the same from the first idea. Like it evolves. But you also want somebody who is not going to sell out too early, because you also want to make a profit. So finding these type of people, this is like a, I don't know, art and science in itself. And usually those are incredible communicators.
Yeah. And Gura, and also this process is a sales process to find the right people you would like to invest. So it's always the question, and this is how AI can support you within your own unstructured data, is who? It's always the question, who? Who is the next I'm targeting for whatever I want to do? If I want to go to market, if I want to develop a product, if I want to support a certain process, it's always the question, who? And AI can crazy support us. Just imagine in sales, if I'm talking about sales, you can easily buy data. You can easily get access to networks. The lack of resource you yourself has is time. So if you're on site one day with 3,000 people in a room, it's always the question, who should I talk to and how can I reach out to this person? Yeah. The same with your crazy data and CRM system. Who's next? Where are the red flags? Where are the white flags? Or the green flags? The same with the buying center. Who's the next person to address that I can put my whole buying center on green? Yeah, so, or the most of the buying center on green, because then I get the contract, then I get it closed. Yeah, so it's always the question who. And it's like in German, there exists this picture of a big bulk of hay with a needle you have to find within. Yeah. And this is where AI can support you. And this is how we put up internally our own systems to be as fast as possible. It's always the question, who's next? What's next? And why? Yeah? And this is what we are repeating.
There is one last question I always ask. It's about your personal hack. So is there a routine or a tool or whatever which had a very, very big impact on your daily operational work? Could you share that with us?
Yeah. Okay. So practically, voice dictation is way faster. Whisper Flow. It's called Whisper. I definitely recommend that. One click and you voice dictate on a phone, on a computer. That's going to speed up your process with AI so much faster. So this is like the input part. We develop like kind of like chief of staff AI second brain. So for context, but that's way too complicated to cover now. I use critical thinking all the time. Claude. Don't sleep on Claude. They just got massive Microsoft investment. They are the best AI that like a software development. So that's kind of a pinnacle of what people use AI for. So Claude Code is the go-to solution for vibe coding developing. And my business partner is like literally have it running for 9 hours. Like developing the whole thing in 9 hours. Now, if you hear this, you think like, oh my God, that's hype, that AI can do it by itself. No, but like he spent 2 hours on creating project requirement document with 220 steps specifically telling, this is what you do when you do this, qualify your output, double check. It's like if you would hire someone and you need to validate the process. So it's a project requirement document when you touch anything with AI, agents, automation, stuff like that. Just, I have my own solution that I developed, but you can just talk with AI and say, I have this idea. I need project requirement document. Talk to me, work with me, explain me every single term. That, let me think. Yeah, automation, of course, N8N. If people haven't heard about it, it's open source. Don't sleep on local AI. So you can run very decent year. Like capabilities, I would say, is like behind by 8 months now. So on a Mac laptop, you can run local AI, which you don't share your data. It's yours. There is no subscription. I use it all the time on planes. On long haul, and I'm like chatting with AI, working, and people are like, wait a second, there is no internet. What are you doing? So don't sleep on that. I think it's going to be an explosion as open source models are becoming better and better. So that's definitely, and from local AI, like LLM Studio is like a go-to, but the one that for businesses and is very relevant is anything LM. Because you can have a knowledge base embeddings, which is smarter way that AI can find information. Notebook LM I use recently a lot.
Okay, interesting. Okay.
Yeah, because of their slide deck feature and mm-hmm. also just like generating, tossing bunch of content because Gemini has large context window and multimodality. So I always have two AI providers at hand. So I have Claude on a max plan, which is $200 a month with no limit. Well, it's kind of limited, but you never run into limitations. And there you also get Claude Code included. So you don't have to pay for API, which is very expensive. Claude Anthropic API is one of the most expensive ones. So I would say Claude, with the Max plan included with Claude Code, you are already covered on any development. And if Claude is down because of Cloudflare, which is today, you need
to have
a second one. And for that, I have right now Gemini, but I always switch. I canceled OpenAI subscription. I'm just like fed up with them and like the company, and lost my full trust. Well, I shouldn't say, like, I always, because of my job, I still would test and get subscription, like, you know, if something comes out, but I don't trust this company, and I have this intuition and gut feeling, and that we are due to have a black swan event. That's just life, and I have this nudging feeling that it's going to come through that company. So I don't know. I can keep going with bombarding with practical things. I love it, but like, I think it's not about tools or platforms. It's like your mindset of being, open and go and test it. Like everything what I mentioned, go check it out. And that already means that you are being more adaptable. And you would be, just with this, would be covered as people who are like calling themselves AI experts.
You know what? If someone is asking me, are you an expert on AI? I'm just shaking my head and say, no. there are many more experienced people outside, developers, whatever.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
I'm just a user. Yeah. So I'm a high experienced user, so to say. Yeah.
From conversations I had with you, you are definitely on the top part. But I myself also, when people come, like, especially on stages, they like to introduce, like, oh, AI expert. I'm like, what does it mean? Like, being expert, it means that you have narrow focus on the, let's say, one specific thing. Who in AI that is on integration level? Yeah, okay, I have 3 years of experience of actually building with AI. You know, if you start focusing on one niche expertise, you will miss something else. So I would like to say, like, adopter, like early adopter, builder, experimenter. And I'm much more focused on like strategic AI implementation, like as we talk, like sales, building business with AI, covering basics first. And then we know which technology, which tool, what API to use. But if you don't have strategy, if you don't know where you're going, if you don't have your sales process, if you don't know to whom you are selling, how you are selling, if you can't clearly take a napkin and map out your sales process from every single step, we are not talking about AI.
Yeah, totally.
Like, that's not the conversation to jump to. Like, this was really like enjoyable. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, thank you.
Love this conversation.
Yeah, thank you so much, Goda.
I hope your listeners will like it too.
I think too. We will just link you and all the things you do in the comments. And if someone wants to get in touch with you, I think it's super easy because you yourself manage your channels. So
people can just check out Goda Go on YouTube, and we can even link at my email and contact, like, reach out. I would love to talk about problems and everything what I see in US, what they do good, what they do bad, and bringing that to Germany, I think, is urgency.
So thank you very much.
Thank you.
Das war wieder eine Folge von Leaders and Missions. Ich freue mich wirklich sehr, dass du eingeschaltet hast und hoffe, es hat dir gefallen. Lass uns gerne eine Bewertung da und teile diese Folge auf Social Media oder in deinem Netzwerk. Ich sage Tschüss und bis zum nächsten Mal, wenn es wieder heißt Leaders and Missions.